Last Sunday, I suggested that our faith enables us to discern the right path for living as we carry on with our lives in this world. And as Christians, we often label this path the way of Christ, because in discerning this path, we draw guidance and inspiration from the teachings and from the example of Jesus. And we like to focus on those teachings of Jesus which describe the right way of living. We focus on teachings about personal piety and integrity, about right relationships, about social justice. But we tend to overlook a substantial chunk of the teaching of Jesus which deals with the opposite of the right way, with treachery and injustice, with vice instead of virtue, with curses instead of blessings. Now, as a prophet and teacher in the wisdom tradition of ancient Israel, Jesus regularly used the technique of contrasting the good and the bad, faithfulness and sin, heaven and hell. For us, it seems easier to talk about the good stuff, the right way, the kingdom of heaven. We tend to get anxious when the topic changes to sin and the road to hell. While we don't really believe in hell, of course, even heaven is a bit of a stretch. At least heaven is relatively palatable. It's not so hard to dream about a situation where all is right and good, where things are shaped by a divine will. We can imagine God's kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. But hell, with its unquenchable fire and eternal punishment, is simply unspeakable for us, in spite of the fact that Jesus talks about it so much. I think that our gospel reading today gives us some incentive to reflect a bit about hell. The parable in our passage talks about two sons of a farmer who were told by their father to go and work in the vineyard. One said, "I'll get right to it," but in fact never did go to work. The other said, "No way am I going to work today," then changed his mind and put in a day's work after all. Jesus evidently told this parable to illustrate that even if a person has made bad decisions and appears to be heading in the wrong direction, it's nevertheless still possible to change one's mind and participate in the good life of the kingdom. And conversely, someone might appear to be on the right path, be full of good intentions, yet throw it all away by failing to live up to their commitment. And this, of course, reminds us of the old proverb, "The road to hell is paved with good intentions." Another one of those old sayings that has been around for a long time without a particular known origin. It sounds like something that could have come from the Bible, but this is not the case. Some people say that it is reminiscent of something written by Bernard of Clairvaux nearly 1,000 years ago. In any case, it sums up the negative side of our parable today. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. Well, let's think for a moment about the idea of hell and what we are to make of it. There's no doubt that hell has been used in the Christian tradition as a threat of punishment. Behave or you'll end up in hell. Do what the church tells you or you'll burn in the lake of fire. Have your baby baptized. You know that if a child happens to die without being baptized, that child will go to hell. Such cruel and baseless threats have been used in Christian culture to wield abusive power to manipulate the population. And that is not how the Bible uses the idea of hell. In the Bible, and in the teaching of Jesus, hell is seen as a consequence of bad decisions that undermine the balance needed to maintain a healthy equilibrium in our personal lives, in society, in creation. The Bible names that healthy equilibrium. It's given many names. Some of the most common are shalom in the tradition of Israel, salvation in the Christian tradition. Now, in hell, there is no shalom or salvation. Hell is characterized by chaos, volatility, destruction, agony. And in one sense, hell is a universal reality, in the sense that it is the antithesis of the created order. The Bible describes creation as an expression of God, whose self-expression brings order out of chaos and keeps that order in place through an ongoing maintenance of the equilibrium in creation. God has created and is creating, as our creed states. And from this biblical point of view, if we took God out of the universe, it would all collapse, return to chaos, end in a state of hell. That can happen, of course. Can happen in our personal lives. Can happen in society. Can happen in the created order. A clear message of the Bible, perhaps one of its primary messages, is that human beings play some kind of role with God in the maintenance of creation. We've been given the capacity to work with God in the maintenance of the equilibrium in creation. We can contribute to that project of bringing about and maintaining shalom, salvation. And this also means, of course, that we can refuse to participate in the project, which, in effect, gives us the ability to undermine the project, bringing about those consequences that will culminate in a state of hell. Now, there are many things that we can do blatantly to destroy that which is good in creation, thereby setting in motion a journey to hell. We can literally destroy ourselves, each other, creation. And a tragically large amount of such activity takes place in our lives and in our world. We know that there is enough of it going on to bring about a literal hell unless we humans stop the destructive activities that are causing climate change and will ultimately make the earth uninhabitable. That will then be hell, a consequence of our refusal to participate in maintaining a well-balanced created order. Jesus talks now and then about such blatant undermining of the project of salvation, but he seems particularly interested in the more subtle ways that we mess up. Hence our parable today. Isn't it just as bad to renege on commitments made, on promises broken? Just as bad to set aside good intentions and withdraw our cooperation in the work of the kingdom? Of course, according to Jesus, that is just as bad. It's worse than making no commitment in the first place and then coming around to lend a hand after all. And we could go on to look at lots of other things that are written in the Bible that Jesus has to say that would suggest we humans do an awful lot to set us on the road to hell. And of course, we can't help but wonder if we are not, in fact, on a road to hell. Not only is our climate at risk, the economy seems to be falling apart, famine is raging again, wars have not ceased, there are major challenges in the life of our city, our churches, in our personal lives, and it can be quite overwhelming. Now, in spite of the fact that Jesus seems to think that hell might just be right around the corner, Jesus is not overwhelmed or discouraged or set back in the pursuit of the kingdom project. Why? Well, Jesus maintains a clear focus on the task at hand and is relentless in his vocation, and there are two factors, I think, at play. two basic points that we might incorporate also into our own pursuit of the way of Christ. First, Jesus insists that every effort counts. When those who have been unfaithful change their mind and join the cause, it's a matter of great celebration. And this theme appears time and time again in the teachings of Jesus. It's never too late, never too late to join the cause, and who knows, some particular contribution, no matter how insignificant it may seem, might be the one that makes all the difference and turns everything around, takes us from the road to hell onto the path of shalom. And secondly, it's a little more complex, but secondly, Jesus suggests and shows us by his own example that choosing the path of shalom over the road to hell is the way to adopt, to embrace abundant life. That should not be surprising, of course, because such a choice puts us into harmony with the divine force working to maintain the beautiful equilibrium in the created order. It must have been difficult for Jesus to imagine why anyone would not want to be in that state of harmony. Why would anyone choose to undermine or thwart or do anything at all to impede the handiwork of the Creator? For Jesus, it was second nature to live in perfect collaboration with the divine maintainer of the created order. But perhaps you have noticed that I have just said something that is theologically incorrect. Some of you are theologians and you would have noticed. We use the term second nature to describe behavior or personal characteristics that appear to be completely natural for us. And frankly, if you told me that a Christ-like character appeared to be second nature for me, I would be flattered indeed. We seem to recognize, we humans, that such a character would indeed have to be second nature because our first or original nature evidently is apt to be something less noble. I guess that's why we use that term second nature. But when it comes to Jesus, our Christian theology holds that it was not second nature, but first nature for Jesus to live in perfect collaboration with the divine maintainer of the created order. And we got a taste of such theology in our epistle reading from Philippians today. So if you want to think about that more, go back to that reading. Now, at the same time, followers of Jesus will be more than content to embrace the personality of Jesus and to cultivate a Christ-like character as a second nature. And so I'll continue to use that term in reference to our efforts to walk in the way of Christ. So just to sum up the two crucial points. One, every effort counts. Two, the cultivation of a Christ-like character as second nature so that making the right choices will come naturally to us. Which brings us to the point of all this sermonizing. The point being, we do have choices to make. And the choices that need our attention just now are the choices we're making in our provincial election, the choices we make in our interaction with Mother Earth. Creation is the theme of our services, one of the themes in our services this fall. Now, I've already said quite a bit about creation and the responsibility that we carry as collaborators with the divine maintainer of creation, but let's lift up again just for a moment an example of a courageous effort from one member of our congregation. As Vicky mentioned, Lynn Gendreville, from our own public witness circle, has gone to Ottawa to participate in the protest against the Keystone oil pipeline. And Lynn is one of several hundred people who are risking arrest in an act of civil disobedience on Parliament Hill beginning tomorrow. You remember last week, Lynn stood here and asked for our support in this action of his. So we're thinking of Lynn today, and we do remember that every effort counts, and that the more we adapt this spirit of collaboration with the divine presence in creation, the better. Now, the same goes for all of our participation in the democratic process. Every effort counts, every vote counts, every bit of research into party platforms counts, every conversation with friends and neighbors counts. Our church, the United Church of Canada, does not tell us who we should vote for. It's up to each one of us to make our decisions, but those decisions are to flow from our Christ-like second nature. And our Christ-like second natures are aching to collaborate in maintaining a healthy creation, a just and compassionate society, a world of shalom. Our church does provide us with a helpful election kit, as I hope everyone knows by now. It can be found on the United Church website. There's probably a few copies floating around our congregation. It provides for us questions to ask of the candidates, questions on such topics as Aboriginal justice, climate change and energy, corporate social responsibility, health care, refugees and immigration, just a few of the topics. And with some careful research into party platforms, we should be able to figure out the best way to use our vote. Sometimes, perhaps often, we then vote for parties that do not get elected. You might have noticed that. We end up with those who had no intention of going to work in the vineyard that Jesus is talking about. But that doesn't mean we give up. They may yet change their minds, sometimes at our urging or as a result of our action, and do some good. And remember, every effort counts. In any case, regardless of the state of the world around us, we do not hesitate to carry on with the pursuit of our kingdom project. We carry on with that task for the sheer joy of it. Every act of compassion, every step towards restoration, every effort towards peace and justice puts us hand in hand with the source of abundant life. And really, what more could a creature ask for? What better life could we live? What greater joy could there possibly be than to get off the road to hell and step onto the path of shalom? Amen.